From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, CARE's response to the making of cartoons of Islam's Prophet Muhammad.
The best response to them is to do what they hate most, which is to be ignored.
Experts note that radical groups thrive on popular discontent. Continuing our series on a political solution in Libya. And people traffickers' billion-dollar profit from Mediterranean migration. It's all ahead. I'm Susan Yawkey. The White House says the investigation into Sunday's attack on a Texas cartoon contest that featured images of the Prophet Muhammad is ongoing, and therefore it is premature to link the assault to a claim of responsibility made by the Islamic State group. The group said on its radio station two of the soldiers of the Caliphate carried out the shooting in Garland outside Dallas. It warned this was its first attack on U.S. soil and that the worst is yet to come. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said federal law enforcement first wants to understand more about the facts surrounding the assault.
The thing that we can say definitively, because of the quick and professional and brave work of local law enforcement officers, an attempted terrorist attack was foiled. What we do know is we know that there are extremists around the globe, including some who are affiliated with ISIL, who are trying to capitalize on the opportunity that's presented by social media to try to communicate with individuals around the world, including inside the United States. There have been a number of individuals, Americans, who have been apprehended by law enforcement who are attempting to travel to the Middle East. And so we're very vigilant about the efforts that are underway by ISIL and other extremist organizations to try to radicalize some individuals in the United States. And you know, we're working closely with community leaders, law enforcement officials, of course, to try to counter that threat and to mitigate that threat. And that's something that we continue to be vigilant about. You recall that a few months ago, the president convened a summit on countering violent extremism to try to collate best practices that are used in communities across the country and that can be used in other communities to repel this threat. But it's one that we continue to be exceedingly vigilant about.
Asked whether individuals or groups or even publications should stop depicting the Prophet Muhammad in cartoons or other drawings, Earnest says that's a judgment best left to those who do so. He said there is no expression, however offensive, that justifies an act of terrorism or an act of violence. Congressman Michael McCaul, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, said based on his briefings, there is no link between the Texas attack and the ISIS group. He called it an assault by two individuals radicalized over the Internet. Nonetheless, he says this is the kind of attack U.S. officials are most concerned about, adding the two gunmen may have been inspired by the group. Terrorism expert Luke Howie of Australia's Monash University tells VOA's Victor Beatty the ISIS group has in the past been opportunistic in taking credit for such attacks, whether it was involved or not.
One of the things that ISIS has been really effective at doing is that propaganda PR campaign that has led to people throughout the world being inspired by the ISIS movement and willing to carry out attacks in their name. Even though operationally ISIS have absolutely nothing or very, very little to do with it. I agree that ISIS do like to claim responsibility for things in order to boost that PR propaganda image. Certainly in this case, though, it seems possible, likely, whatever, that the people who were involved were likely inspired by ISIS, being that they're the flavour of the day at the moment in the whole Islamic extremist space. Yet them claiming responsibility does not mean certainly that they are responsible. And similarly, it doesn't mean that they weren't entirely responsible. I would suggest the obscurity of the event, it was well known in Texas in that region, but not necessarily across America or across the world. And given that, it seems like an unusually specific target for an internationally based organization to target. Seems to have all the local flavors of a locally resided but globally inspired extremist, or at least a person willing to become an extremist.
Is it possible that jihadists like the IS group have shifted their tactics to not just include major targets like the World Trade Center in New York, but also smaller ones that are more easily accessible with regard to security?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a tactic switch. I think IS has long shown itself willing to attack wherever it can have an impact. Just because something's obscure doesn't mean that it wouldn't have a significant impact if a terrorist were to target it. And ISIS, I think, over the journey, a relatively brief journey when compared to Al-Qaeda, have shown itself willing to carry out a multitude of attacks in a myriad locations. They're not wedded to the idea that it has to be a big attack every time. And, of course, a sort of right-wing-leaning event is a great target for ISIS militants, for ISIS-inspired extremists. So a good ideal target, a hardened target, of course. This event was always going to have quite a bit of security, and that's exactly how it played out. An unsuccessful attack, you would add. I don't think this has added very much to the fear-based assumptions that people might have about the effectiveness of ISIS. Indeed, quite the contrary. I think it's shown that they can easily be stopped with some reasonably careful security planning. But, I mean, I think the jury's probably out. We're still coming to terms with it. We're still trying to understand exactly what happened. And perhaps one of the things that will happen that will help us understand better is finding out exactly what the backstory is of the individuals who participated in the attack.
Police have identified the gunmen as Elton Simpson and Nadir Sufi. The pair opened fire at the event, wounding a security guard before police shot and killed them. Court documents show that Simpson had been under surveillance since 2006 and was convicted in 2010 of lying to federal agents about his desire to join violent jihad in Somalia. For reaction to the incident in Texas, we spoke with Ibrahim Hooper, National Communications Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Well, obviously, the American Muslim community, like all Americans, condemns this attack and acknowledges there's absolutely no excuse for a violent response to even hate rhetoric espoused at this event. So that goes without saying that American Muslims repudiate any acts of violence or religious extremism. And, you know, the proper response to hate speech and hate rhetoric of the type espoused by Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer, and Geert Wilders is to offer more speech promoting mutual understanding and tolerance.
Now, this event, it was a contest to make a cartoon about the Prophet Muhammad. Did you advise your people how to respond to this event?
Prior to the event, we advised the community to ignore it completely. Hate mongers like Pamela Geller seek free publicity from the promotion of inflammatory hate rhetoric. And I think the best response to them is to do what they hate most, which is to be ignored.
And how do you feel about freedom of speech? Do you think this is a form of freedom of speech?
Yes, we're strong supporters of First Amendment free speech rights, and people are free to be even bigots like Pam Geller if they so wish. Why they choose to be bigots, you'd have to ask them about that, but they have that right. We believe that free speech is a two-way street, that just as Pamela Geller and her ilk have the freedom to promote hate speech, we have the freedom to challenge that hate speech in a peaceful manner.
Do you think treatment of Muslims is worsening in the United States?
I think it's clear that the level of anti-Muslim sentiment in our society is increasing. To a large degree as a result of the hatred put forward by people and like Pamela Geller and her organization.
What can we do to improve the situation?
I think the answer is for mainstream followers of all faiths and people of all backgrounds to get together to marginalize extremists and to, just set the tone of mutual respect and respect for diversity in our society.
That's what the United States is all about, isn't it?
That's right.
Ibrahim Hooper, National Communications Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations in Washington. Islamist terrorism is surging in many places worldwide, including in Western societies. Governments are fighting to curb the spread of radical groups in the Arab world and their influence on mainstream Muslim communities. But the official methods so far have failed to eliminate radical Islamism. Analysts say militant groups offer an attractive alternative for some people, especially disgruntled young men. Zlatika Hoke reports for VOA Television.
The French Parliament on Tuesday voted overwhelmingly in favor of a controversial bill that would legalize broad surveillance of terror suspects in France.
Je veux d'abord me féliciter de ce résultat très large.
I want to say first that I am pleased with this large result this very large majority in favor of the bill on intelligence. It's a bill that preserves our basic liberties, a bill that is a framework for the activities of our intelligence services, but which gives them additional means so they can be as efficient as possible in the face of the terrorist threat, but also against serious crime and industrial espionage.
Ou encore face à l'espionnage économique.
But while lawmakers from diverse French parties approved the legislation, many others questioned whether it would have a significant effect in fighting terrorism. Analysts say radical groups are an attractive alternative for young Muslims unhappy with their official leaders.
And of course, the main reason that was betrayed to all people throughout the region is the West that's trying to control and destroy the Arab and the Muslim nations and Israel in the region. So this is the ultimate enemy. And that's always being in the media, in the school, in every social gathering, and charge people with a lot of ideas, and here comes all of these radical political parties and radical groups giving you an answer. Well, we are not these governments. They cannot take an action. We take an action instead, and your future is with us.
International air raids have curbed territorial advances of the heavily armed Islamic State group in Iraq and Syria in recent months. But an older terrorist group, Al-Qaeda, has made gains. That group lost a lot of its power after its top leaders were captured or killed, and its financial network was disrupted. But analysts say Al-Qaeda has recovered and made gains in recent months with financial support from some Arab states.
And today, it seems like Al-Qaeda is very much back in business in both Syria and Yemen in terms of getting sponsorship from certain Gulf Arab states. One can see, for example, quite openly that countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar are sponsoring an umbrella organization that the Nusra Front, which is Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Syria, is a part of.
Analysts say inflicting military defeats on insurgents and dismantling terrorist cells are temporary measures. Many say Islamist radicalism can be fought more successfully by strengthening moderate Muslim communities and by offering better choices to young Muslims worldwide. Zlatica Hoch, VOA News, Washington.
The Libyan National Conference rejected a draft proposal to end the conflict in the nation that was published by Bernardino Leon, head of the UN support mission in Libya. We've been hearing reaction to that development from Libyan parliamentarian Al Abu Zakouk. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El Shenawy.
You said that the proposal has been rejected because it is not based on a comprehensive, balanced solution to the conflict. In your opinion, what would be the balanced solution for what's happening in Libya?
I consider that to be, as a member of the House of Representatives who has boycotted it because it is being built unconstitutionally, and it has from the very beginning really went against the constitutional declaration in Libya. I consider that regardless now, if the House of Representatives, being covered by the recognition, quote-unquote, internationally recognized institution. International recognition does not mean that you control the country. The GNC, the General National Congress, and the National Salvation Government, which is under its command, and the forces that are under the command of the GNC, which is known publicly as Libya Dawn, all of these forces have control over 80% of Libyan geography and 80% of Libyan demography. Tobruk, either the government of Tobruk or the HOR in Tobruk, which are the cities? Tobruk and Baida, that's the cities they control. And population-wise, it doesn't even come to 10% of Libya. Nevertheless, they claim to be the internationally recognized group. And because of that, they wanted to forget or denounce or not recognize the GNC and Libya Dawn and the National Salvation Government because the world does not recognize them. I think it's a mockery of the whole situation. And as a member of the House of Representatives who refused to be actively participating in that meeting in Tobruk, because I told them I cannot meet in Tobruk as an independent member of parliament while from the airport of Tobruk, airplanes going to hit my city, Benghazi. And I am a Benghazi representative. I cannot do that. Ethically and morally and nationally and patriotically, I cannot accept it. So we have to have a balanced solution which does not lean towards Tobruk or towards Tripoli. And that is the failure of the United Nations, envoy. He leaned towards Tobruk on the pretext that it is elected by the Libyan people. Even though if we come to numbers and if technicalities, the boycotters, the 30 members who boycotted the meetings in Tobruk have garnered more votes, popular votes, than the rest of the people who are in Tobruk. That's one. The second point is that the whole issue, the whole elections, the numbers shown that only 16.7% of the Libyan voters participated. Compare that to 64% of the Libyan voters who participated in electing the GNC, the General National Congress. So there is, in any way possible, an opportunity because the GNC said Libya first. And we are willing to even dissolve ourselves for the sake of Libya. The other side said we are first. And we will not recognize anybody else but us. So the intransigence of the Tobruk group has to be faced by the United Nations envoy and by the world at large, that by this way they cannot reach a political solution for the Libyan crisis.
So what do you expect next with the UN?
I think, as Mr. Leon said in the United Nations, he is not pessimistic, but he is not optimistic. I am optimist because I know that Libyans, at the end, especially the supporters of the revolution of 17th of February, will come to save the country. Now we are in a state of war between the forces of the revolution and the forces of the anti-revolution. I think we have to give in, they have to give in, and a consensual agreement has to come. Otherwise, Libya will not become anymore the country that we called Libya before.
Libyan parliamentarian Al Abu Zakouk. As migrants continue to die trying to cross the Mediterranean from North Africa and the Middle East, Europe says it wants to stem the flow by targeting the people smugglers. Experts, however, say such action would be difficult because of the vast web of organized crime that controls the trafficking. Henry Ridgewell has been following the migrant trail through Europe and reports from Milan.
Silhouetted against the Mediterranean sunrise, smugglers herd dozens of migrants from across Africa and the Middle East onto inflatable boats on a deserted North African beach. Offshore, they are loaded like cargo onto a larger vessel, which they hope will take them to Europe. In recent years, tens of thousands of migrants have died through drowning, starvation, and dehydration. The boat journey is just one stage of a vast network of people trafficking that starts in the country of origin. Andrea De Nicola, professor of criminology at the University of Trento in Italy, travelled across Africa and the Middle East, interviewing those involved in the smuggling network. VOA spoke to him at Milan Station, a major hub for migrants.
It's a ruthless travel agency. They work in networks and they can ally among themselves. And even if we close the route from Libya, they will probably work from Tunisia or Algeria or again from Turkey. They are flexible and they change.
Europe has called for targeted action against the people smugglers. Ricardo Fabiani of the Eurasia Group says that would be difficult but not impossible.
The use of drones, for example, to target people involved in the smuggling business, let's say. And on the other hand, Italy and other European countries have intelligence networks in Libya that they can rely on for this kind of information.
The smugglers, however, are part of international crime syndicates earning huge sums, says Di Nicola.
The United Nations estimate up to $10 billion. One Pakistani guy in Italy was smuggling 700 migrants and asked for each guy 7,000 euros.
Nearby, Mohammed scans the arrivals board in Milan station. He's looking for his uncle, who fled the civil war in Syria and has come to Europe across the Mediterranean on a trafficker's boat. Mohammed is struggling to track him down. He was living close to the Yarmouk refugee camp in Damascus, says Mohammed. The situation there is well known. It's very difficult and dangerous. We got the news from Libya that he had departed and the boat had arrived in Europe. Despite the links to criminal gangs, it's clear the smugglers are providing a way out for Syrians and others fleeing conflict. That's why Europe must reform its migration policy, says Di Nicola.
If you're gonna tighten Fortress Europe, probably they will increase prices. This is what these criminals told us. So in order to disorganize them, you need criminal law, you need investigation, but you also need prevention, reduction of opportunities, and of course a better policies for assisting victims.
Europe is determined to tackle the traffickers, but as the death toll in the Mediterranean rises, there is a growing debate over whether the continent should open safer channels for legitimate refugees fleeing war. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Milan, Italy.
Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. You get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
10 years ago, the administration of then-President George W. Bush launched the President's Malaria Initiative, or PMI, a $1.2 billion program that aimed to reduce by half deaths from malaria in 15 of the hardest-hit countries in Africa. In 2008, the program was expanded to 19 African countries and the greater Mekong subregion. Over the past decade, working through this initiative, the United States and its partners have helped the target countries make significant strides toward controlling malaria. PMI coordinator Rear Admiral Timothy Zeamer and Global HIV/AIDS coordinator Ambassador Deborah Birx, MD, wrote recently in a blog that the contributions of PMI, together with those of other partners, have dramatically improved coverage of key malaria control interventions, including use of insecticide-treated mosquito nets, indoor residual spraying, accurate diagnosis and prompt treatment, and intermittent preventative treatment of pregnant women. Indeed, according to the World Health Organization, since 2001, malaria deaths have decreased by 47% globally. That's over 4 million lives spared. Most of that progress has taken place since 2005. Still, according to the WHO, in 2013 alone, malaria sickened some 198 million people and killed 584,000 of them. Clearly, more needs to be done. The 2005 President's Malaria Initiative expires at the end of this year. And so the administration of President Barack Obama has formulated a new plan that will take us through 2020. The new strategy begins with the ultimate goal of eliminating malaria everywhere. To get us started, over the next 5 years, we will work with our partners to reduce malaria mortality in PMI countries by one-third from today's levels. That means malaria levels 80% lower than they were in 2000. We will also work to reduce the occurrence of malaria within PMI populations by 40% from today's levels and help at least five PMI-supported countries to meet the World Health Organization criteria for pre-elimination. There is no greater joy than knowing children, mothers, and communities are thriving because malaria no longer ravages villages, wrote program coordinators Zeamer and Birx. America's result-driven global health assistance saves and improves lives, reduces long-term health costs, and lays the foundation for sustainable development in the world's poorest countries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.